Good afternoon. We're going to call the Elections Finance and Government Operations Committee to order. And the first bill would be, well, first of all, let's, anyone want to move the minutes? Representative McDonald moves the minutes. Any questions or comments? All in favor of passing the minutes? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. Minutes approved. So our first bill is House File 1329. Would the author please sit at the testifier's table? And introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. State Representative John Kosnick, author of House File 1329. And there are two amendments, Mr. Chair, and I would move or ask for movement of the DE2.
The chair moves DE. Well, first of all, the chair moves that House File 1329 be approved and move to the general registry, and the chair also moves to get it in the form the author prefers, moves to adopt the DE2 amendment. Two-year amendment and bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. This bill deals with Met Council reform for a long time. We've had and felt and heard a lot of concerns about the structure of the Met Council, both from conservatives and liberals. And in fact, there was in 2020, the governor had a blue ribbon panel that met extensively and produced quite a report on this. So this was 4 years ago. But we've been discussing this issue for a long time. In 2022 or 23, maybe it was 24 even, can't remember. We had to further the discussion and explore the ideas, both in the Blue Ribbon panel and generally, there was a legislative task force on metropolitan government, I think it was a task force, and we met and came up with weren't able to come up with a solid recommendation at that point. It was kind of some people wanted an elected Met Council, others just simply staggered terms. What the DE2 amendment does is takes what I felt were some of the more agreeable items in this area to move forward to have more accountability, more transparency, and have more input in the nominating committee for the Met Council members themselves. And so the first part of the DE2, this is a reincarnation of House File 3323 from 2023. But the first part of the DE just introduces a staggered term so that there is some continuity in the members that are serving at the Met Council, even during administrative changes. The second page, it provides with the nominating committee to have more notice that there is an opening for Met Council member positions, and it also modernizes it with electronic notice to, very importantly, to the local organizations that the Met Council oversees, your counties, your cities, and other organizations that are here at the Capitol mostly that deal with and represent metro cities, Minnesota counties, and the townships. And then it establishes a nominating committee, whereas the governor has three appointees, metro cities has five appointees, counties have seven, one for each of the counties that are affected by the Met Council decision. So it has a total of 15 people on a nominating committee, and that's where we have there's an attempt to establish more accountability and better selection of who the Met Council members are other than just straight governor's appointments. And they make recommendations to the governor and provide at least three finalists per seat as a recommendation to the governor, and then they publish those names, which is different than what we currently do. And there is a 2-week, 14-day waiting period, and then the governor, if he or she decides not to select from the nomination committee, needs to provide an explanation to the county and the nominating committee, excuse me, not to the county, but to the state, and provide an explanation of who he or she has selected and why they didn't take the advice of the nominating committee. And so it really puts a lot more power into the hands of our local units of government to have influence on who is representing them at the Met Council. And then it talks a little bit more about members' experience and relevance to the work that is done at the Met Council. And that, Mr. Chair, is the overall of my bill. I know how staff is here if they have more technical questions or want to compare it to currently, or if I misspoke. But I'll stand for any questions, Mr. Chair.
I do have one question. The area that is underneath the Met Council, what is the percentage of population of the compared to the total state?
Well, I wouldn't be able to give you an exact, but roughly the metropolitan area is about half the state.
Thank you for that. So that's, it's not a trivial little council here. Half the people are affected by it. And Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're still just on the motion to adopt the DE2 amendment, correct?
Yes, okay. Representative Freiberg. Because it's a DE, I figured it required, a little bit of discussion, some, if there were some clarifying questions.
Yeah, just to that point, I think overall, in general, kind of the DE is probably an improvement on the dramatic changes that the bill made. We still have some concerns with the substance and the process that's followed, but I think, for purposes of this moment in the hearing, I guess I'm fine with the amendment going on just so it can get the bill in the shape the author would like it. But I'll probably have some questions then after it's been adopted.
Well, thank you, Representative Freiberg, for requesting a renewal of the motion to adopt the DE2 amendment to get the bill in the order that the author wants. All in favor, aye. All opposed, nay. And it's been amended.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I plan to discuss most of the bill originally. I guess I would share one comment, and something that I've struggled with as I've looked at this over the years, is that why don't we have an elected Met Council? And as I've studied it and worked on these task force and commissions and looked at the Blue Ribbon panel, an elected Met Council, I have concerns with it because it would almost become like a mini legislature. They would be empowered with an election certificate to have a lot of power, raise taxes, and one of my main concerns. But I also think that then it would overshadow the role of the Met Council to help represent the local communities, the units of government that that's their real purpose, the cities, the counties, the townships. Met Council members are there to represent those areas in their districts. And so an elected Met Council, while you think it would be helpful and more accountable, it's actually would make it a less accountable, less transparent, because people don't even know who their Met Council people are right now. And I don't know that this bill helps that necessarily, but empowering them with an election certificate and not having the accountability and the transparency would, like I said, create a mini legislature with an awful lot of power. But what this bill does is empowers our local units of government to be involved in the nominating process so that we can have better influence on who is representing us at the Met Council, no matter what part of the district or metropolitan council that you live in.
I would like, you know, we have people watching and they don't have all the documentation maybe and resources and familiarity with this discussion. What portion of the Met Council would be made up of locally elected people that would be able to vote on all issues?
No portions would be elected. There's a nominating committee, Mr. Chair, and elected officials influence and help select and serve on that nominating committee. And so they would still be appointed by the governor, and the governor would report to the nominating commission, the rest of the state, who they picked, and if it's not somebody in that nominating committee, he or she, as the governor, would need to provide an explanation. And there is still legislative, the other body would provide confirmation.
Thank you. And I believe Representative Freiberg has some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So Chair Kosnick, you mentioned that this amendment is similar to recommendations made by the Blue Ribbon Commission in 2020. But I know since then we've had a legislative task force on metropolitan governance that resulted, which I believe you were on. Yeah, I see you nodding, so thank you. That resulted in several recommendations different from that one. And I know there were a lot of stakeholders that were represented in that task force. It included the Association of Metro Municipalities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, Minnesota Association of Townships, collective bargaining groups, higher education, transit groups, just to name a few. So I guess I'm just curious, did you seek input from any of those groups in the development of this DE amendment?
Representative.
Mr. Chair, Representative Freiberg, there was a legislative task force that met, and maybe even in this room, but through the work in the interim on that, there actually was no recommendation from that task force because there was difference of opinions. Some wanted, like I mentioned, just staggered terms. Some wanted elected officials. Others wanted more of a council of governance structure, which is more the underlying of the original bill that was introduced before we amended it. And so what this bill does, after consultation with all those groups that you mentioned and input over this whole process or many years, in fact, is what I feel is most agreeable to most different camps of where they think. And so it's an opportunity to tackle once again, and it's been elusive so far, I certainly admit that. It's been elusive to reform the Met Council, but there's always been concern about the Met Council, deep concern across the aisle. And so what this bill does, and why I would recommend bring it forward and hope that the legislature does have the courage to forward a bill and pass a bill to begin a little bit of reform that we can pass.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so I didn't hear that there was any, like, newer or more recent stakeholder outreach as part of this, because, I mean, a lot can change in 5 years, I guess we are, since 2020.
Representative Freiberg, when you referenced the task force, I thought it was implied that the task force had conversations with multiple entities, and since the author was actually a member of that task force, you know, through that structure probably would have. So I was confused by your comment that there wasn't any new outreach, but please go with your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So just to some of the specific language in the bill, if you look to line 2.20, this is talking about the nominating committee related to that recommends nominations to the Met Council. So in this version, there are three governor appointments, five appointments from the Association of Metropolitan Municipalities, which I know is not the only organization that represents cities in the metro area. So three from the governor, five for cities from AMM, and seven county appointments from the Association of Minnesota Counties. I mean, certainly county government is great, but I did spend some time on a city council. I know one of the less glamorous things that the Met Council does is manage the regional wastewater infrastructure, and that has a huge impact on cities. So I feel like maybe there should be at least equal representation from cities versus counties on the nominating committee, if not more for cities. So I'm just wondering why this imbalance is there.
Representative.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Freiberg, to clarify, I think the task force that was bipartisan, bicameral, met in 2024, so it was pretty recent that we met. The Blue Ribbon Task Force is older, 2020. And to your question, this is just the nominating committee, and so you'll have the governors, the cities, they certainly can nominate members, city council members, to be on the Met Council if they chose. But this is just the nominating committee.
Representative Freiberg.
All right, thank you. I mean, I won't drag this out. I do feel like this process has been pretty rushed. I mean, if you look at the timestamp on this amendment, it's yesterday at 11:28 a.m., so there's been very little time for some of these organizations to comment on this. I mean, this is still, you know, the largest local government in the state. That's the Met Council. And, you know, these are some pretty substantial changes. And I know it's something a lot of different people have different recommendations on. I just don't feel like we're there yet. And I feel like this could use more time in committee. So I'd like to move to refer this bill to amend the motion and move the bill to the Transportation Committee. And I'd request a roll call.
Ready for the.
I feel like, you know, in Chair Kosnick's committee, some of these issues could be hashed out and there'd be more time for stakeholder input.
While we're getting ready for the roll call, did you have a comment?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative Freiberg. I appreciate your desire to maybe have more time to vet it. I believe the amendment and was met within the time frames of this committee. Look at the date on the Blue Ribbon Task Force, 2020. This has been studied a long time, probably the whole time that you've been here in the legislature. I recognize that there are a few new members. I don't even know if there's any freshman members on your committee. But that's part of our job as legislators is to quickly dive into it. There's been ample time for public comment. It was posted. And this isn't a new issue. And certainly these provisions that are in here, trying to offer an olive branch across the aisle here, to be honest. These are really not controversial. So I think we should be ready to vote. You'll have more time to discuss. If you have some concerns, friendly amendments, I'm happy to work with you. But members, I think this bill and the concept has been studied quite a bit in the legislature's history here. For a long time and very recently. So I think we're ready to go to the floor, and we can certainly happy to work with members on both sides of the aisle if you have concerns and work on it before we go to a floor vote.
I've been reminded by staff that only voting members can make motions. So is there someone that Representative Green or Representative Lee?
Thank you for getting my last name correct. So I move to amend the motion to re-refer House File 1329 to the Transportation Committee because, again, I think for us, even though the amendment was posted within the deadlines for this hearing, the amendment or the deadline for testifiers to sign up to testify was actually last week or just a couple days ago. So I or not last week for this hearing, but basically the time for these stakeholders that Lead Freiberg mentioned, you know, was not sufficient for them to testify on this bill. And so that's why we asked for a yes vote on this motion.
Please take the roll.
Chair Quam.
No.
Vice Chair Altendorf.
No.
Representative Akum.
Yes.
Representative Coulter.
Aye.
Representative Davis.
No.
Representative Gordon.
No.
Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative McDonald.
No.
Representative Roach.
No.
Representative Vernig?
Yes.
The vote being 5 yes and 6 no, the amendment to the motion fails. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. Then I would move to table the bill. Okay. And request a roll call, please.
Please take the roll.
Chair Quam?
No.
Vice Chair Altendorf?
No.
Representative Acomb?
Yes.
Representative Coulter?
Aye.
Representative Davis?
No.
Representative Gordon?
No.
Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Lee?
Yes.
Representative McDonald?
No.
Representative Roach?
No.
Representative Vernig?
Yes.
There being 5 yes and 6 no, the motion fails. Seeing no other discussion, did you have a closing?
Oh, okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I did want to make a comment. Actually, I was going to ask a question, but I found the answer, and it turns out I was wrong, so it does happen.
I went to suggest that.
it shall be so noted in the minutes.
Glad we're official
in the
here.
Journal.
One comment I did just want to make, sort of piggybacking on what Chair Freiberg, or Representative Freiberg, excuse me, mentioned. The Association of Metro Municipalities does good work. They put on a great breakfast. But historically, that's an organization that has existed to serve communities that don't receive LGA. And so I would just suggest, moving forward in terms of where we look for representation from cities, that may not be the best organization to work with. But just something to sort of put on your radar there. The other thing that I wanted to say is I actually do agree that it would be unwise to populate the Met Council with elected officials. The way I've sort of come to see it, for all the very real concerns that folks have about the Met Council, I don't think they are solved by turning them into politicians. So just wanted to thank you for that.
Representative Greenman? No? Okay. Seeing no further discussion, I renew my
Mr.
motion.
Mr. Chair?
Oh.
Mr. Chair?
Oh, Representative Lee?
I'd like to request a roll call on this.
Okay. I'll renew my motion that House File 1329, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Registry. You may take the roll.
Chair Quam?
Aye.
Vice Chair Altendorf?
Aye.
Representative Acomb?
No.
Representative Coulter?
No.
Representative Davis?
Yes.
Representative Gordon?
Yes.
Representative Greenman?
No.
Representative Lee?
No.
Representative McDonald?
Yes.
Representative Roach?
Yes.
Representative Vernig?
No.
There being 6 ayes and 5 nays, the bill passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Next bill is House File 931, Representative Nash. And I notice there are 3 testifiers listed. One is remote. The other 2 may sit at the testifiers table. And you may introduce your bill, Representative Nash.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, and given that I am not a member of the committee, if you would be so kind as to move my bill before the committee, and I believe we are sending it to the General Register.
I would move that House File 931 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 931 is really based in solving a problem that I would argue most of us have probably had, and I know that my testifiers will speak to the same thing. I would imagine most of us have gotten calls from panicked constituents that have said, Jim, well, if your name's not Jim, but they said to me, Jim, I have an actual ballot in the mail, and who sent me this, and why did they send me this? It's freaking me out, and it has my name on the application. I'm very concerned. And 9 times out of 10, after I walk through it with them, or they maybe send me a cell phone picture, it turns out that it's just an application for absentee ballot. And I'm not trying to take that opportunity away, but I'm trying to just add some clarity to the process to say we want folks to not get freaked out. I think that we can all agree that a freaked out voter is a bad situation. But the bill effectively says that we're going to put on somewhere on the envelope that this is not on behalf of a unit of government. This is not an official ballot. And then that it would disallow the ability to pre-populate the application for the absentee ballot. And I think that this creates for people who receive this, whether they're my son, who was a military member when he got his absentee ballot, he said, Dad, I got the official one, but then I also got a handful of other ones, and I'm not sure what to do. But then I also talk to a fair number of older people in my community, and they get a little concerned, a little worried, and I want to make sure that we're addressing that so that no one feels like they're being assaulted with lots of live ballots and that they don't call the counties, which I know that several of my county-based testifiers will say that they take a lot of phone calls. So this is really rooted in the idea of making it very, very clear that the thing that you're getting in the mail is just a request from an organization that can send these out to make sure that you're getting your absentee ballot. So that's the genesis of the bill, Mr. Chair. There is submitted testimony from Common Cause, and I think they're in the room, but they submitted a written piece of testimony for you. Saying that they are in favor of the bill. They are a nonpartisan organization that supports good elections. And then we have several testifiers, if we could move to those, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Representative Nash. And I believe our first testifier is on Zoom. If you would identify yourself, affiliation for the record, and please begin.
Sure, thank you, Chair Kwong, members of the committee. Good afternoon. I'm Michael Stahlberger, Director of Property and Environmental Resources for Blue Earth County, and my department is responsible for administering the election for about 40,000 registered voters in the county. I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Association of County Officials. MACO represents all 87 counties' auditors, treasurers, recorders, and finance officers, including elections administrators. I'm here to express our association's support for the objectives presented in House File 931. As described, 931 requires disclosure statements on envelopes and materials such as the sample ballots and absentee ballot applications when they are being sent by non-elections officials. It also requires absentee ballot applications to be sent blank without pre-printed voter information. These items are included in MACO's legislative platform. We consider them administrative changes that address the cost-effectiveness of elections activities and reduce administrative burden. They also enhance voter understanding and will reduce confusion or mistrust of election processes. As the association crafted its platform this year, we heard repeatedly from county election administrators across the state that the volume of unsolicited absentee ballot applications being sent to voters caused unnecessary confusion and sometimes anger. It's the county elections workers who have to address these questions during the busiest times of an election season. A disclosure on the envelope and on the forms would greatly reduce the number of calls. It also would allow elections administrators time to do other important work associated with the absentee voting process and preparing for election day activities. Similarly, we heard from elections administrators that pre-filled applications are just as problematic. While the forms are populated with publicly available information, that information is oftentimes incomplete or it's simply not accurate. These issues mean the application cannot be accepted. And when an application can't be accepted, the voter must be contacted, a new form must be sent out, And in some cases, balloting materials are sent out as non-registered, leading to even more confusion and more work for the voter. A worst-case scenario would be issues with an application that are so severe that they delay the process so much that the voter risks being disenfranchised because they run out of time and options to actually cast their ballot in the election. Election administrators pride themselves in ensuring every eligible voter who wishes to vote and cast a ballot can do so in the fashion that works best for them in an efficient manner. Election administrators view pre-filled applications as a roadblock to these efforts in many cases. As I mentioned, MACO has heard from many counties on this issue, especially on the pre-filled applications and the third-party mailing of absentee ballot applications. Here are some specific concerns they shared with us. Pre-filled applications come back from recently married voters with that voter's former name provided. The voter's name is oftentimes already updated in our voter registration system due to our ongoing list maintenance. This mismatch of names oftentimes results in that voter's challenged status in voting being changed to status challenged. We also get calls from families who are unhappy or suspicious that their deceased relative receives materials because an outdated mailing file was used to mail out an unsolicited application. We also have heard multiple examples of counties responding to concerns about perceived fraud because the voter receives multiple applications for absentee ballots after they've already sent back the official one from the county or applied online to receive a ballot. We also have way too many examples of duplicate applications being submitted that require much of the administrator's time in actually determining what is the most current application and seeing whether or not that voter requires a new absentee ballot or if they just filled out another form. The last example we'll share with you is also one that we received multiple examples of, and that's where applications come back with incomplete information because the form is only partially filled out. We may have the voter's date of birth, but not their year and their date, and that requires us to do an extensive follow-up and oftentimes results in sending out another application at the cost of the county. In closing, MACO supports the objectives presented in House File 931 and appreciates your attention on the matter. We look forward to additional conversations on this subject and other elections administrative items that we hope can be considered to address some of the cost effectiveness of elections activities, reduce some of the administrative burden with elections administration, and enhance voter understanding and transparency. I'll conclude my testimony now, but I'm always available for questions and would look forward to answering any of them. Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Hildegard. Thank
you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Matt Hildegard. I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. The Association of Minnesota Counties represents all of Minnesota's 87 county governments. I want to thank you for the time today and also for Mr. Stahlberger so eloquently stating and itemizing the reasons for support of this bill. We do see this as a good governance issue and a good public policy and hopeful that it is supported in a bipartisan fashion. And it really is, from our members' perspective, an issue of common sense, too. And I want to thank Representative Nash for bringing it forward this particular year. I think there's been different authors in the past. The real issue here is that I think everyone would agree that at a core principle, we don't want folks emulating or even creatively marketing materials as if they're government themselves. I'm sure folks in this room have received even these solicitations for copies of your birth records or certificates that make it appear like you're getting the record or the solicitation from government itself. I know I've fallen prey to that and actually thinking, do I really need to send $30 into Hennepin County? It's pre-filled and everything for a copy of my birth record. It even looks like it's from Hennepin County Stationery. These kind of things just mislead people for doing things that they shouldn't necessarily, they haven't asked for. Here we're talking about one of the most sacred acts that we can take place in a democracy, which is voting itself. And we don't want there to be confusion. And right now there is, and that's what you're hearing from Mr. Stahlberger. That's what you hear from our members at our conferences. We put on sessions with the League of Minnesota Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and even with the assistance of the Secretary of State office before elections to talk about misinformation and how to respond to allegations of certain questions from the community. One of the most popular questions is I've received multiple ballots. Or even, as Mr. Stahlberger said, someone who has unfortunately recently been deceased and said, someone sent me a ballot for my recently deceased family member. Well, one, it wasn't a ballot. It was a ballot application. But it's causing confusion. And we just want to be clear that we we know the undercurrent of why these ballot applications are being sent is to drive up voter participation. Everyone wants voter participation to be the highest that it can. But we can also do that. Two things can exist at once. We can be doing those efforts, and we can also be making clear that this isn't government correspondence. And so we hope that that just notice will just cut down on some of that. And the last thing I'd say is any attempt I can just to give glowing reviews of our election administrators in the state, I will. Mr. Stahlberger speaks on behalf of Minnesota Association of County Officers. You'll hear more hopefully this year about the work that they do during election time of the year. And the fact is that the need for their time to be used elsewhere in responding to confusion on this or reaching out to people and saying, hey, this isn't filled out right or the information isn't matching up, it is real. And so we do feel that this would also be an efficiency for staff time as well. And with that, I'm happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
And thank you. Ms. Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. I'm Nicole Freeman from the Office of the Secretary of State. I'm here today to speak on House File 931. I want to thank Representative Nash. We've worked with you over the last several years on language. And so I want to echo what the other testifiers have mentioned. Our office also does receive a number of confused calls from voters ahead of each statewide election, wondering where this application came from and things like that. So we usually have a script detailing, you know, turn the application over, look at the outside of your envelope, right, and who sent that to you to be able to clarify where it came from and why it showed up on their doorstep. So the office is supportive of the provisions in Subdivision 1. I think we still have a little bit of hesitation about Subdivision 2, and we understand that the bill, you know, seeks to prevent a private organization from pre-printing voter information, and we really appreciate Representative Nash's clarity in who is prevented from or prohibited from pre-filling the application information in. And I think what we would like to continue working with the representative on is, you know, assuming that the required information is presented on the application, if it is pre-filled, how can we make sure that the voter themselves are not penalized for that, and that the voter themselves wouldn't have their application rejected in the situation that if they used a pre-filled form? And so I think that's what we'd like to just continue to work on and clarify, but otherwise appreciate the spirit of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman. And I did have one question. How many people are receiving these that are not on the voter rolls, are not registered?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have that number. My understanding is that these are the mailing lists are typically derived from the public information list. And so as that list is changing every day, as people move in and out of the state or register and pass away, right? That list is changing every day. And so it's possible someone could get one who was no longer an active voter in Minnesota. But again, my understanding is it's coming from the public information list of registered voters.
Thank you, Ms. Freeman. I can tell you positively because people have brought things to me from people that have not lived at that address for sometimes a decade or more, and people have been deceased again sometimes for a decade or more. So thank you. And we have someone new. Can you please introduce yourself and affiliation?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Kirk Peterson. I'm one of the lobbyists for Hennepin County. I wasn't on the list, but Representative Nash asked me to testify. We also support the objectives of House File 931. As Mr. Hilgart and Mr. Stahlberg laid out pretty clearly, so I don't need to go into a lot of detail, but during election season, our staff is just inundated with calls from people saying, hey, I got something in the mail. Did this come from you? What is this? Or they show up at our voting locations and try and cast a ballot or present the material, and they don't know what it is, and so our staff is caught in the position of having to explain this is not an official government document. And so having it clearly marked on the material, on the envelopes that they received, I think will just really remove a lot of confusion for voters and for residents. It'll ease a lot of burden on our already overworked election staff, but still allow the third parties to get out the information that they need. So, Representative Nash, thank you for bringing this.
Well, thank you. Any other testifiers from the audience? Seeing none, does anyone wish to move an amendment? Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're not actually going to offer the amendments at this time. We thought about it and decided not to. It was hasty. There were some incorrect cross-references and so forth. I do have a few questions, though, for the bill author when we get to that point.
Mr. Freiberg.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Freiberg.
So thank you for bringing this again, Chair Nash. I can certainly appreciate the issue bills trying to address. I do have some questions about the scope of the bill, though. We heard this bill in the last biennium, and there were several questions raised in committee. And I see the bill language is exactly the same as it was in the last session also, so there haven't been any changes to it. And I thought one of the committee members 2 years ago had an illuminating example. He mentioned there was an elderly woman in his district. He was going door to door. She said she wasn't really able to vote in person anymore. So he suggested that she vote absentee instead, and she said she didn't really know how to do that. And so he went back to his car, got an absentee ballot application, gave it to her, and she sent it in. And he said that every 2 years she would contact him, ask for an absentee ballot application, and he would mail it to her. If you read the terms of the bill, it seems like that situation might get covered by it. Is that kind of what you're getting at here, Chair Nash?
Representative Freiberg, because of the changes made in the last legislative session, that person can now be on the permanent list. And so I think maybe there's a solution to that. To the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Freiberg, when I brought the bill to the committee the last time, the person bringing those points said, oh, I'm happy to stop by your office and talk with you. And then when I would try to talk with him, he didn't have the time. So it's awfully difficult to address someone's concerns when they aren't interested in engaging in the conversation. What I'm trying to get done is you've just heard from county officials, you've heard from the Secretary of State, you've heard from a number of other people who are trying to address this issue. We're trying to eliminate wasted staff time. I think that in the case of the representative that you're talking about, they helped them write it out in person, I believe. And that is not something that I'm trying to go after. What we're trying to go after is a pre-populated form that shows up in your mailbox in an envelope that doesn't clearly distinguish that this is not from an official government entity that you have requested a ballot from. So I think that's clear enough, and that the example that you use is trying to find an example to give you a reason to vote no on the bill. But I'm happy, and I did say this to the Secretary of State's office, that I'm willing to work on this with them. If you have concerns, I'm happy to hear what you would offer as an alternative. This is going to the General Register, and I'm happy to, if we agree upon something, to do an author's amendment on the floor to give you some greater clarity and some comfort language so that you can feel good about voting for the bill.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you for that. I still think the language might be a little broad. So another question, if the absentee ballot application is sent by a political party or candidate committee, isn't there already a prepared and paid for disclaimer on those materials?
To the author.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Freiberg, this is trying to get at anybody. I mean, you and I have each, I would imagine, been mailed things from people who are not a political party, the Sierra Club, the NRA, any group in between all of those. We're trying to make sure that we're adding clarity for all of them. And the only way to get clarity for all of them is to put it in statute that covers everybody.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. Last question is, what constitutes a sample ballot? Because this does apply to sample ballots as well. I mean, and sometimes things by outside entities are labeled sample ballots, even if it's not what we intuitively think of as a sample ballot. So it might say sample ballot and then just consist of nothing but like a big glossy picture plus the name of four candidates. Would that sort of thing be covered by this language?
Well, it to the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It says absentee ballot. Wouldn't necessarily affect a sample ballot. A sample ballot is something that, as you know.
Line 1.15. Also 1.
Representative Freiberg. Go ahead.
Sorry, sample ballot is referenced on line 1.15.
If you would have let me finish, I would have said that the sample ballot is going to be included in the same envelope that says this is not an official ballot. So, I mean, it's pretty clear. And you've been on a sample ballot. We've all been on sample ballots. We've all had, you know, I think you said a shiny, glossy picture that says, vote Jim Nash, vote Mike Freiberg in the next election. If it comes in that envelope, it is prepared and paid for by pick an organization. But it should say this is not an official ballot. And I think we can trust our members of the public to not pick a shiny, glossy document that they get to think that that's actually a ballot they're going to put into a tabulation machine. So I think it's clear enough. I think we're trying to nitpick something that is pretty clear for people of the public. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Nash. I've seen this. We've talked about this language a lot since I was on the committee. I know that when we, in 2022, when this was in committee, we added some definitions. I think part of that was to deal with the issue of the sample ballot that kept coming up. I don't think that's nitpicky. I think putting definitions in is good and important. I think what you're trying to do, if I'm understanding, is make it so that people don't confuse something that's sent to them that looks like a ballot. And so the defining what sample ballot is, I don't know if you're amenable to that, but I'd love to talk to you about it afterwards. My question is actually to the concern that I know was raised a few times, and it's actually probably a question to, I don't know if Michael Stahlberger is still on, or if maybe Mr. Hilgert or?
Mr. Hilgert is here.
Okay.
Mr. Hilgert, give your name and then respond. Thank you.
Sure.
Matt Hilgert with the Association of Minnesota Counties.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the concerns that was raised was if this prohibition goes into effect and let's say a voter gets in the mail a pre-populated absentee ballot and sends it back in, how would a county elections official deal with it? And is there a concern? I think the concern has been raised over and over again that it potentially could be rejected because the law prohibits those forms.
Mr. Hilgard.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenman, I think that's a good question. And honestly, I saw a little bit of an email back and forth between Mr. Stahlberger and Ms. Freeman on this particular issue. I think there's a hope that it would be accepted and that there'd be communication. But if we need clarification either outside this committee or within the bill, I think that depending on the author's interest, that's something we would be interested in.
Representative Greenman.
And Mr. Chair, if I could, before we go back to Representative Greenman. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Greenman, you and I have a good history together of working together as best we can. I am amenable to, if you want to offer some definitions to clarify this, I'm willing to listen. I'm willing to do that as it goes to rules and then the general register. But here's the thing. You've now heard from Hennepin County. You've now heard from multiple county organizations. You've all probably got them yourselves. I'm willing to work with you on tightening things up. But I think the genesis of the bill is almost incontrovertible. It's a problem that we need to address.
Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree. I actually, to Chair Quam's point, one of the reasons we wanted to pass the permanent absentee list is so that people could sign up and people who wanted to get lists, it's good for our county officials because they don't have to send out a absentee ballot form and folks who want to be on the list are on the list. And so I think that that you referenced, Chair Quam, that change, I know folks are using and hopefully will do a lot of the work that you want to do. But I hear you in the we do, and I share your values of wanting to reduce voter confusion. I think we want to ensure that folks can get registered, that paperwork can be processed effectively. One of the things I know about pre-population, having worked on voter registration a lot, is one of the biggest reasons that voter registrations are rejected is handwriting. And so it's why online voter registration is great, is because folks put it in and there's no handwriting issues, there's no data entry issues, and so moving from a paper form to an online form is actually good for moving folks who want to be registered from that form onto the rolls. We know that. The evidence around the country shows that. And so part of the pre-population, I think, is trying to avoid those handwriting issues. That being said, I hear you, and I'd love to work with you. I do want to make sure, and any time an election official doesn't know, that's a problem we've created. We should, if we're going to pass this bill, we should make sure that we are telling folks and holding, and I think this is what the Secretary of State said. I hear this is what some of the counties have been talking about, too, that if it is accurate, if it's a voter who gets a pre-populated form, it's not their fault. They send it in. It's accurate information that meets all the requirements of the voter registration laws, that should be accepted. And I think if we agree on that, I think putting that in the language is both good for clarification. It's also good for the counties that are not making them guess. So we should continue talking about it. It's why I came to talk to you about it. If that's something you're amenable to continue working on the language, I know you've been working on this a long time. Today, I think I'm going to vote no. There's too many concerns, but would like to talk to you about it before it goes to the floor.
To the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Greenman, my office door is open. I'm not sure that our badges get each other to each other's floors. That's fixable, by the way. We should endeavor to do so. But I think that I'm happy to work with you because I'm grateful to agree or to hear that you agree that this is a problem. I think that has been contested in years past, that it's not a problem. I think you've heard clearly from county officials and you've heard from the Secretary of State that this is an actual problem. So if a minor language problem is addressable, I'm happy to do that. I don't know that with my agreement that it's worth voting no on, because I will give you my word, and you've heard my word before, and I have never backed out of my word, but I'm happy to work with you to get where everybody can have a kumbaya moment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
But seeing no other, did you have a closing statement or?
Vote green.
With that, I renew my motion that House File 931 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Registry. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, nay.
No.
And it passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee.
And our next bill is Representative Davis. And since you're on the committee, you can actually do all the motions, and I'll sit back and have some popcorn.
Thank you, Chair Quam. I would like to move House File 1253 before the committee and to be referred to the General Registry.
Well, thank you. And I see one of the testifiers. There's a second testifier if you want to. Thank you. And the author can proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're talking about House File 1253. It is a very, very simple bill that helps alleviate burdens that are being put on our counties in regards to elections while preserving high voter turnout. And that's what I want to stress. This bill still preserves high voter turnout, and I'm looking forward to having discussion on that point right there. Currently, voters who request an absentee ballot or are on the permanent absentee ballot list or in a mail-only precinct are required to have their ballots mailed to them at least 46 days before an election or 30 days before a township election in March. This bill moves that date to 28 days before an election. In-person absentee ballot voting currently begins 46 days before an election. This bill also reduces that time to 28 days. Temporary locations used for voting before Election Day must currently be designated at least 47 days before the election and are changed to at least 29 days before the election in this bill. Absentee ballots returned in person must currently be submitted by 8 p.m. This repeals it to back to what it used to be, 3 p.m. on Election Day. Minnesota residents located outside the U.S. will still have their ballots sent at least 46 days prior to an election. I have testifiers from Crow Wing County here, or I have a testifier from Crow Wing County to talk about, discuss the importance of this important bill.
Please state your name and affiliation and testify.
All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Jory Danielson, and I serve as the Administrative Services Director for Crow Wing County. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here in support of House File 1253, which proposes changes to the current statute regarding absentee vote ballot return times and the absentee voting period for non-UACAVA or uniformed and overseas citizens Absentee Voting Act voting. As someone new to elections administration, I've witnessed firsthand the challenges our staff can face in processing absentee ballots. Our goal is to ensure that every election is free, fair, secure, and accurate as dictated by statute. One of the changes for consideration is modifying the return deadline for absentee ballots to 3 p.m. on Election Day. This would allow our election officials to move more effectively process ballots, ensuring that we can accept, count, and report absentee results timelier as Election Day polls close and our counties receive in-person voting totals. Additionally, reducing the absentee voting period from 46 days to 28 days for all non-UACAVA voters would provide more efficient processing and administration, particularly during our primaries and general elections. Shortening this period can address staffing challenges, improve efficiencies, and the chain of custody while ensuring voters have adequate time to cast their votes. It also provides more time between the August primary and a state general election in November for local election administrators to prep ballots, test equipment, and prepare for the general election. For context, in Crow Wing County for the 2024 presidential state election, 36% of votes cast were by the absentee ballot. And of that, only approximately 16% of those ballots were received back in the first 18 days of absentee voting. I understand these proposed changes might seem significant, but I firmly believe that they will help strengthen our election system even more. With fewer days of absentee voting and an earlier cutoff for absentee ballot returns, we can focus on quality control, accuracy, and more timely reporting of results, ultimately supporting our goal of free, fair, secure, and accurate elections. Thank you for considering House File 1253. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
And Mr. Chair, before we move on, I just want to quickly say something else.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Crow Wing County is absolutely the gold standard for when it comes to operating an election. I've been paying attention to them very closely for the last 3 years under a microscope, and it's quite impressive. So I just wanted to add that for the record.
Thank you. Mr. Linnell.
Thank you, Chair Quam and Representative Davis. And I would like to echo the sentiments.
Please state your name and affiliation.
My name is Paul Linnell, and I'm the Elections Director with the Office of the Secretary of State. And I would like to echo those sentiments around Crow Wing County and certainly our county elections administrators across the state, including those recently into the field, for the excellent work that they do. The Office of the Secretary of State appreciates the opportunity to weigh in on this bill and participate in the discussion on ways to improve absentee voting administration in Minnesota. The Secretary does have concerns with reducing the length of time for the absentee voting period. Since 2010 in Minnesota, voters have had the ability to cast an absentee ballot starting 46 days prior to Election Day. This start date coincides with that federal deadline to mail ballots to military and overseas voters. It provides consistency across the state so that any eligible voter may choose to cast their ballot any time during the 46-day window. Voters are using this period to vote. Looking back at the 2024 election, at the start of the absentee voting period 46 days prior to Election Day, there were 249,872 absentee ballots that were issued as of that date. Prior to the 28-day mark, which the bill proposes to move that timeline to, There were 551,505 ballots that were issued and 168,372 ballots that were accepted. So I know, as Mr. Danielson mentioned, it's not 16% in Crow Wing County and maybe similar percentages in other counties across the state, but a not insignificant number of ballots that had been issued and accepted as of that point in time. However, the Secretary does recognize the need for further flexibility to right-size voting options across the state. A provision in our administration bill would offer a choice to municipalities who wish to administer absentee voting. Cities and townships would continue to have the option to be open for the full 46-day absentee voting period, like the counties, or they could elect to be open for just the last 18 days before Election Day. We're open to discussing other ways to allow local governments to right-size services for their voters that preserves voter access for the full 46 days. We also recognize that overall, voters are voting ahead of Election Day in increasing numbers. In 2024, this was nearly 40% of voters that cast their ballot prior to Election Day. We're currently working on developing the system for true early voting and expect this will be implemented statewide for the first time in 2026. After all counties and voters have had the opportunity, counties to administer the process and voters to use that early voting process, it would make sense to reassess how we conduct elections and the early voting process based on what voters are telling us they prefer and what that data shows. Additionally, the Secretary supports maintaining a uniform close of polls time of 8 p.m. across the board for all forms of voting. We know that many absentee voters return their ballots during the extended time from 3 to 8 p.m. at the 2024 state general election. In Hennepin County, there were 1,495 absentee ballots returned in this window. Similarly, in Washington County, there were 123 absentee ballots that came in from that 3 to 8 p.m. period of time. So voters are utilizing these additional hours. And allowing absentee ballot return until 8 p.m. ensures consistency in the deadline, whether a voter is casting their ballot by absentee, mail ballot, or at the polling place. Since this was a new change, it was challenging to effectively plan for the number of absentee ballots that were returned and how that would impact the unofficial reporting of results on election night. With the information learned from this past election cycle, there's now a baseline to use for staffing and planning absentee ballot board and absentee ballot counting on election night. Additional funding in the voter account would also help with ensuring ballot boards are fully staffed to process ballots that are returned on election day. Our office will continue to communicate with media, candidates, and the public prior to election day that results will not necessarily be reported immediately after the close of polls at 8 p.m. And although the reporting timelines did shift later than previous years, it's worth noting that 55 out of 87 counties had results reported in by 10:30 p.m., and 76 counties had results reported by midnight for the second highest turnout election in Minnesota history. We also understand in the bill it's looking to address issues related to unofficial results reporting. The office believes that the requirement in Section 9 that unofficial results for absentee ballots and ballots counted at the polling place must be jointly reported is already covered in current law under 203B 121 Subdivision 5 Part B and Section 204C.19 Subdivision 3. There is a limited optional exception to this requirement that counties can employ in 204C.19 Subdivision 3. This was added in 2024 to allow count results from those absentee ballots received after 3 p.m. to subsequently be added to the total at a later time. The intent for this change was to allow for more timely reporting of the vast majority of a county's results, with only those from absentee ballots to be added to those that were initially reported. The two counties mentioned earlier, Hennepin and Washington County, did use this option in 2024. We agree that it is critically important for only correct results to be reported and share in the goal of eliminating any errors in results reporting, either because of technical issues or human error. To that end, we would like to require that counties complete an errorless test of the election reporting system prior to Election Day. We have language drafted that we hope to amend into our admin bill. The office currently asks counties to complete this test and provides guidance on doing so ahead of each election where the election night reporting system is used, but it is not required in statute. As I mentioned when I visited the committee a few weeks ago, we are looking into administrative improvements to the election night reporting system to better reflect the percentage of precincts reporting when there are instances when results were initially reported but then subsequently modified to correct an error. We're also exploring including a step in the election reporting system where counties would affirm that complete unofficial results have been uploaded. Any changes would be designed to reduce confusion and provide Minnesotans with a more accurate picture as to what data has been uploaded. We'd be happy to work with you and MACO to come up with other solutions to attempt to catch errors before unofficial results data is uploaded. Thank you very much for your time.
And thank you. And it's really became evident that we do need to make sure we don't have things that confuse the public and causes less faith in the election process. I do want to, with the 8 p.m., you increase the possibility that somebody comes in to vote in person and then their absentee ballot shows up after they've voted. I know for years, if you found something out and you decided to change after you've returned your absentee ballot, that you go in and you vote and that absentee ballot would then not be, tabulated. How many times in the last, 3 election cycles has a absentee ballot been not tabulated because of an in-person voting?
Chair Kwan, thank you for the question. I don't know that we have data to show what that number is as far as an absentee ballot being received either by mail or in person where that voter had cast a ballot at the polling place. The requirements would remain the same and are in place so that the absentee ballot board must affirm and check against that polling place roster to determine whether or not that voter has cast a ballot at the polling place before they can go ahead and open and count that ballot.
Is there, and my understanding is that there were some tabulation activities before on absentee ballots before the finishing of, in-person voting on election day. It would be nice to actually see data instead of your recollection so that we can understand, because that was one of the things I keep hearing is it's so many, it's over a month and a half early that you can go ahead and, turn in an absentee, and a lot of stuff maybe comes out, 2, 3, 4 weeks before the election day, and you might change your mind. I'd like to have some confidence I can tell them about the processes that guarantee that you can come in and have that vote changed. Otherwise, they're disenfranchising themselves by having sent in an absentee ballot ahead of time. Mr. Linnell.
Chair Kwan, I'm happy to speak to that particular point as well. I think that was coinciding with the time at which absentee ballot boards may begin that work of opening the envelopes and preparing those ballots to be fed through a tabulator. So that deadline was changed recently from the 7-day mark to 18 days prior to election day. So those are really the cutoffs where once a voter has submitted their ballot, that's sort of the point of no return. After those envelopes can start being opened, a voter's ballot is separated from their record and they don't have the ability to claw back that ballot anymore.
It's disappointing that we have changed the system such that if new information comes out, a voter cannot make their choice on election day. And I will see maybe about writing some sort of an amendment to try and fix that again, because that was one of the key things with the no-excuse absentee balloting in Minnesota, is that you would have that opportunity to correct your previous ballot. Now, I see we've got some questions. Representative Vernig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. I do have a question. So I live in Dakota County. If you haven't heard, there's been a lot of issues with mail service, and I also spend a lot of time up in Cook County, Lutzen, Grand Marais area, which also has had a lot of issues with mail service. And so shortening this period, I think, would disenfranchise those voters, given the, I mean, I'll be honest, if you go on next door or social media, between coyotes, fireworks, mail services, like in the top five things discussed. So would you, you know, some states only require absentee ballots to be postmarked by election day to be counted. Are you open to considering that change to address these mail delays? Because I know this would be really impactful in my community.
And before the author answers that, there is a special treatment for all election mail, especially ballots. In fact, I know that postmasters monitor and send personnel to deliver those ballots specifically. So we could maybe try and find out from the Postal Service their document, but they have reports that they do daily on the weeks ahead. So there is priority, and some mail gets delayed, but when it comes to election mail, there from on high, there's a dictate, and you can respond to the question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Vernick, for the question. Yeah, obviously, not all counties' mail services are created equal. And again, I'll just bring this up. The 46 days currently is a minimum, and the Secretary of State's office could probably speak to that. But if a county knows that they have a problem with the mail system, that number is just a minimum. So,
Representative Vernick. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to ask more questions about the mail service, but I think I'd like to also offer a clarification that, I mean, all the standard should be that all mail service is equal because we have the USPS, right? And this idea from Benjamin Franklin was to make sure, right, that if you send a piece of mail to someone, that it actually makes it there. I think, you know, the reason why, you know, I want to continue this line of questioning is that in Minnesota, we have numerous precincts that are actually mail only. And that has been true since 1987. And so just curious if the author will tell us if he consulted with any of the local election officials in those areas.
Representative Lee, I remember, I think I even offered an amendment or carried a bill that tried to increase the amount of time. So that's why you can't quickly have an election because you have to ensure the mail. But I would have the author respond.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lee, to the issues with our mail system. That's not in my bill. That's not addressed in my bill, obviously. I'm being a little bit funny there. But to your question, we have 18 mail-in precincts, only mail-in precincts in Crow Wing County. I have not spoken with those precincts.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. So, I mean, my question is not just about the precincts in Crow Wing, right, but they're across the state. And Representative Vernick brought up Cook County, where there are also a number of precincts there that are mail-in only. And so, you know, according to data from the Secretary of State, that means about 150,000 voters in Minnesota have been voting by mail only for a very long time. And I think it's really important that we get their input if you are going to significantly reduce the time that they have to vote and mail back in their ballots.
To the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Lee. I did not hear a question in there, but I'll just say we're talking 4 weeks. 4 weeks is a very long time for folks to turn in a mail-in ballot.
And if I remember correctly, what we did was ensure that the ballots were mailed in a mail only precinct X number of days before. So we didn't allow for, if there was a primary, we made sure there was minimal time for that to get delivered and done. And we could probably see if we could do some analysis and get some data on that. But that isn't a brand new thing, and unfortunately, the post office doesn't respond to our legislation. That'd be a federal matter. But I think, did you have an additional question?
Yeah, I just offered that, you know, right now there's a lot of uncertainty on the federal level and about how the USPS system is working. Our senators have commented on how slow the mail has been in Cook County and in Dakota County. So, I mean, obviously we can't impact that, but what we can do here is, you know, keep the window for mailing back in absentee ballots as long as it is, which is why, I mean, I didn't quite hear a response to Rep. Vernig's question earlier. I mean, would the author be open to, you know, setting a postmark date, which a lot of states have, to make sure that these people who vote only by mail can continue to exercise their right to vote?
To the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Lee. And my door is always open. I'm always willing to work with and hear from the other side of the aisle. Thank you.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Chair Quam. Just to kind of wrap things up for our side, you know, we made some changes in the last session to expand voting options. And I don't think shortening absentee periods and potentially excluding voters, possibly by increasing their dependence on the mail, is the way we should be going at this point. So if I had a vote, I would be voting no.
Well, Representative Freiberg, there is a option of in-person absentee voting weeks ahead. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I actually didn't catch that. I don't want to go after our lead. Just a comment listening to this conversation, because I think that it sort of feels like this bill is working at cross purposes, I think, by of itself, by reducing the amount of time there is to for voters to get and return their ballot. You sort of push everything and condense it towards Election Day, which at the same time will put more pressure on Election Day and the stuff that's happening then and potentially delay results. So I think there's two things going on in this bill. I think both of them, I agree that we should not be limiting and reducing the amount of time people have, particularly when we're talking about mail balloting, particularly when we see what's happening with the post office, especially now when there's going to be a shakeup at the post office. I think we want to make sure people can get their ballots, counties have time to process them, and to the point that I think was raised, that I know has been raised by a lot of folks, of making sure that we can give the election officials the time they need to process and accurately process and count the ballots, and also get voters the information they need, which obviously matters too. So it feels to me like there's those two things are working against each other in this bill, but look forward to continuing the conversation, I guess.
And closing to the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some closing comments. You know, it was brought up that we made some significant changes to election law last session, and that is true. And half of the state's voice was shut out of those committees. This side of the aisle knows they were not heard. We did not have bipartisan support when it came to our elections, and I was told that by a more senior member who had been here for a very long time, that was historic in the state of Minnesota, that we did not have bipartisan support on our bills coming out of Elections Committee in the last biennium. So I'm grateful for the opportunity this biennium for the rest of Minnesota to be heard when it comes to our elections. The Secretary of State's office was very interesting in the terms and the numbers that they used. They talk about ballots issued, which is important, but what's even more important than that is ballots cast. 93% of ballots were cast in the state of Minnesota within a 28-day window. 93%. And I am very confident, otherwise I would not be bringing this bill, that the 7% who did not cast their ballot within that 28-day period are very competent and diligent to make sure their ballots get put in the hopper within that 28 days. This bill is going to help alleviate the burden that we have caused for our counties. It's a very simple bill. Representative Greenman, you had talked about how we here at the state level can at times create problems. And we've certainly done that for our counties. And House File 1253 is going to help alleviate just a little bit of that. Members, please vote yes. Thank you.
And the author reading
Mr. Chair, I request a roll call vote on this.
The author renewed his motion.
I would like to renew my motion, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Please take the roll.
Chair Quam.
Yes.
Vice Chair Altendorf.
Aye.
Representative Akum.
No.
Representative Coulter.
No.
Representative Davis.
Aye.
Representative Gordon.
Yes.
Representative Greenman.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative McDonald.
Yes.
Representative Roach.
Yes.
Representative Vernig.
No.
There being six ayes and five nays, the bill proceeds. We got House File 124. Would the author and the, I see two testifiers, go to the testifier table? My understanding is in the packets you have the as introduced version, and it should be the first engrossed version. To the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have the amended version, or did you want me to go through the DE2 that we did in public safety? Are we good?
You should mention the update. Touch on those points. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the DE2 amendment, real quickly, adds a section to the underlying bill authorizing a political subdivision to receive a gift on behalf of one or more public safety officers and distribute it to the intended public safety officer recipients in the circumstance in which a public safety officer employed by the organization was killed in the line of duty. So this amendment allows the political subdivision to establish policies in accordance with this. It also allows the local government to fundraise and expend funds for funeral or memorial services in the event of a line of duty death, including travel to national memorial events for public safety officers within a given time frame.
Okay. Representative Freiberg, are you okay with her explanation of the difference between what is here, what was posted online, is the first engrossment?
Yes, I just confirmed that the version in members, the version in your packets appears to be the version of the bill as it was introduced. I don't know if that was included in your packets by accident or not, but if you go online to HF 124, there is a first engrossment that's available.
And what's linked to our page to public. So if you're in the public and you click on the page for this committee, you click on the file, you're seeing the engrossed version. Representative Freiberg.
And just so we're clear, and I'm sorry, what was the motion on this? Is it being referred to, where is it being referred?
I was going to have someone make the motion, and it would be referred to the general registry.
Okay. As long as we're clear that in the motion that what's being referred is the first engrossment of the bill, I assume that would meet with the author's intentions.
Okay, and in fact, I'll just go ahead and I'll move House File 124, the first engrossment, be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Registry. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think this might be your easiest bill today in this committee. My co-author on this is Representative Woody, who spent 27 years on the Burnsville Police Department. And he and I have worked closely together. We believe that this is not a partisan issue, but a human issue. So it is in that spirit that I hope you will hear our remarks today. I'm going to keep my remarks very short because we have just two of the most incredible humans I know here at the table, and they can speak to this better than I can. But I think everybody here is familiar with what happened in our community just a little over a year ago. And so really this bill is providing some clarity in statute for when tragedies of this magnitude happen and there is an outpouring of kindness and support, how we intake that into our communities, our departments, and our city. And this bill is written broadly enough that should this happen again in any community that it kind of covers everyone. So I will turn my time, if that's okay, over to our testifiers, Mr. Chair.
Chief Jungman, please introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for having us today. My name is BJ Jungman. I'm the fire chief for the city of Burnsville. As you likely know, we experienced a horrific tragedy just over a year ago on February 18, 2024, in an incident that took the lives of three of our fellow public safety servants and wounded another. Following this tragedy, we had an overwhelming outpouring of support from the community and the public. We are very grateful for that support. While the support has been much appreciated, we have found under the current statute, it's been difficult for the police and fire departments to be able to accept and use these donations to support our healing. It was very difficult to have to turn away well-meaning gifts that could have been helpful in our team's healing. This has left us looking to alternative means such as outside foundations to fundraise to send our staff to national memorials. These donations would help provide the opportunities for our staff and the fallen families to heal together. This bill would allow for the acceptance of donations and public purpose expenditures for 24 months following a line of duty death for an agency. While we hope no one ever has to use this statute, we do hope that it helps anyone that unfortunately experiences the loss of a colleague. We appreciate your support in paving the way to help agencies in the future.
Thank you. And Chief Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for hearing this bill for the city of Burnsville, and thank you, Representative Berg, for authoring the bill. Now, my name is Tanya Schwartz. I'm the police chief with the city of Burnsville. I've been with the city for almost 30 years, and so I care deeply about our police department, our fire department, our city, and our community. After the tragedy last year on February 18th, we received just an overwhelming response from our community to support all of our public safety departments and our fallen families. And their loss is really still emotional for us, as you know. And we're just incredibly grateful for that generosity that our community has shown us as we continue to heal and work to support our officers and our firefighters as they deal with the loss of their partners. And as we've received generous donations from organizations and individuals to support us in our healing, we've found that the Minnesota statutes regarding gift laws for municipalities do not adequately address such a unique situation. Team morale and cohesion is very critical for healing our public safety teams and our fallen families after a line of duty death. And this bill will provide the needed clarity to allow the city to accept and distribute these donations and support our staff through meaningful memorial events. So just again, I thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, for your consideration of this bill.
Thank you. Any member comments or questions? I can't add any more to the way you put it to the author.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I told you this was going to be easy. I was worried there for a few minutes that we wouldn't get to this bill today, and I had asked them if this committee ran over if they would be able to come back. Of course, they're serving our community, so they couldn't. But to be able to listen to firsthand our first responders and leaders, I think, is far more impactful than anything I could say on this. But once again, just thank you to everyone who has held our community in kindness. I know this has affected a lot of people personally in our body who have, they themselves lost three brothers that day as well. So just thank you.
And thank you. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. And it passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now the main event with Representative Freiberg. I would move House File 977 before the committee. And if the testifiers would, you can take the other two seats or a seat behind the testifying table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for clarity, is the motion to lay the bill over for possible inclusion?
Representative Freiberg, that was my understanding. Was there a different intent from
nope.
the author?
Nope. I just wanted to make sure. I think you had said you
were moving it before the committee.
So just wanted to make sure. Thank you.
Proceed.
Thank you. So thank you, Chair Quam and members of the committee. So last biennium, one of our lesser-known accomplishments that I'm proud of was setting up the Voting Operations Technology and Elections Resources Account, or the voter account. This fund assists local governments with costs related to elections infrastructure, and it was distributed all over the state. The ongoing base for the voter fund is $3 million annually. There was $1.25 million established in 2023, plus the $1.75 from the two grants that we rolled into the voter fund in 2024. If no additional dollars are allocated, the local governments will receive $1.836 million less in fiscal year 26 than they did in 25. So this bill adds an additional $5 million to the voter fund. I suspect that will be a lot relative to whatever budget target this committee might get, but it is a drop in the bucket compared to the need of local governments. The bill is supported by local governments, cities, and counties alike. I know we have a testifier here from who came here all the way from Candiohi County, so thank you for coming here. I know a Hennepin County commissioner was willing to come testify, but I had this feeling we'd be pressed for time, so I told him it wasn't necessary. I don't know, maybe we could call him back. It seems like we're doing better on for time than I thought we would. So, but that's okay. I think we're fine.
Mr. Gardner, please introduce yourself and mention your
Thank you,
affiliation.
Mr. Chair. Steve Gardner, Candiohi County Board Chair, and I also chair the General Government Committee for the Association of Minnesota Counties, where we're representing all of Minnesota's 87 counties. We very much appreciate Representative Freiberg's bill today, House File 977, and appreciate the chance to speak to you today as well. Election support and funding is a core issue at AMC and its General Government Policy Committee in particular. And it is one of those issues that unites counties all across the state, no matter what their size, geography, or political leanings. And we see elections in a primarily nonpartisan manner. Counties and our local government election partners take their election duties very seriously. We know that we are responsible for administering the most important functions of a thriving democracy, and that public trust and confidence in this process is vital. We dutifully administer local, state, and federal elections. It's no secret that the state has asked us to do a lot when it comes to elections, particularly in recent years. And given the importance of election security, and updated technology, these funds are very much appreciated. In Candiohi County, we received approximately $10,000 in 2023 and $40,000 in 2024 for a total of around $50,000 in the last 2 years. We used these funds for election technology infrastructure, cybersecurity upgrades, polling pads, and staff assistance, primarily since we had to, in the last election, hire on a total of 12 temporary staff to help administer absentee voting and serve on the absentee ballot board. Just recently, we have replaced 7 out of 32 AutoMark ballot systems with the new Omni ballot systems, which will eventually have a price tag of about $130,000 additional. That might seem like a small amount to some on the committee. However, that represents a near 0.5% levy increase for Candiohi County. The voter funds help us plan and be good stewards of these limited taxpayer resources. We are very appreciative of the proposed increased funding and the state's commitment in assisting local government in covering the cost of running elections. We thank you for the time today and respectfully ask your bipartisan support of this bill.
Thank you. And on Zoom, I believe we have Mr. Stolberg.
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Quam. Michael Stolberger, a Property Tax Division Director for Blue Earth County and also representing MACO. I'll try to be super respectful of your time here today and just really dive into our association's gratitude for the voter fund and also express our support of the funding for the next biennium as well. You've already heard from individuals how the funds have been used, and we can echo that that's the way that the funds have been used across the state. Elections do cost money. It is a cost that's typically borne by taxpayers, and so the voter fund helps in that regard. I will also point out that the voter fund has a really nice feature that allows county election administrators to carry those dollars forward into future years to make some of those really large purchases that the commissioner there just described to you. And so of this most recent reporting period, the $1.25 million that counties, cities, and towns were allocated, there was some of that money held forward for next elections, and we did survey our members in those regards, and they're holding those dollars for future equipment purchases, for technology investments and whatnot. So we are trying to be really good stewards of the election funds that are provided through the voter fund. The last comment that I'll also make, and I'd be happy to share any of the specific details that I'm kind of glossing over here with the committee if you'd like that, Chair. But the last detail that I'll share with you is that MACO counties acknowledge the fact that elections need to be a shared cost or a partnership in the cost of administering the elections. And I'll just put that in frame of reference for you from Blue Earth County's perspective. We received at the county level $13,800 in 2023 and then another $53,600 in 2024. That $67,400 is roughly 11% of our total operational costs for the 2024 election. That doesn't include any off-year costs. We still have to staff an election office year-round, of course, and it also does not include any equipment investments in Blue Earth County. So our voter fund offsets about 11% of the cost of the elections that's otherwise borne by our taxpayers in the county. So again, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. Again, I'd be happy to share more specific detail from our work as the MACO and our surveying of our members on how funds were used. But we just want to, again, express our appreciation for the voter fund and look forward to continuing to partner on the cost of elections to keep them fair, impartial, and secure. Thank you.
And thank you. And Mr. Linnell.
I do see the I know Mr. Linnell's from the Secretary of State's office. I do see the Secretary of State himself is here. Looks
well. It's nice that you were able to sub in for Mr. Linnell and members. We'll have to continue at 7 p.m. because we have 7 pages of questions for that have been waiting for the Secretary of State to return.
Chair and members. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. I'm a poor, pale substitute for Paul Linnell, but I'll do my best. In 2023, when the legislature passed this voter fund account, it was a really, really big deal. The first time in state history, as far as we know, that there was a dedicated fund that acknowledged the legislature's intent to help local governments offset some of the costs of elections. It's not a buyout. It was never intended to be a buyout. I've never met one person from a county, city, or township that wants the state to take over the cost of elections. They've never asked for that. What they've asked for, as you heard from the commissioner from Kendi Ojai County, what you heard for from in Blue Earth County, is just to augment and supplement that because the costs have gone up. Mr. Chair, you and I have talked about this for a long time. So there's been a lot more attention, a lot more costs. Our office is responsible for distributing the dollars, so it's a pass-through to us. We, at your direction, give them out to the counties, all 87 of them, and we do it according to a formula that they approved of, that they designed. In fact, the testifier you just heard from was one of the key people who helped design this formula. So we do that every year before July 20th. And the initial investment of $1.25 million was distributed in July last year. So last July, our office distributed over $4.8 million more dollars as the legislature chose to shift two other grant funds into the voter account. So our office is responsible for collecting data from the cities and counties annually on the spending of these funds. And in our report released earlier this year to you, which covers the first batch, the first distribution, the $1.25 million, we saw that local election offices use the dollars for a lot of expenses. The top three were hardware and software, equipment and staffing costs for both the election administrators and the election judges. So to those of you who are here and in office for the creation of this account, thank you for supporting local election administrations. You know, putting on an election is a team sport. We all have different roles and responsibilities. We don't count votes, for example, as you know. That all happens at the local level. We want to make sure they're taken care of. And one other thing that I always mention, some of you have heard me say this, but I never miss an opportunity. You know, out of our 87 counties, only 9 have full-time year-round elections-only departments. For the vast majority of the state, the folks who do elections and do them so well and competently, they're wearing other hats. They do property taxes. They do ditch and drainage work. They do inspections and other things. This is a way to just help them out a bit. I know they appreciate it, and it makes them, enables them to do their job even better than they've been doing for so, so long. So thanks for your time and attention, members. This is a really good bill.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I hope they don't have the full year round because it takes that long to tabulate. But we do have Representative McDonald, I think, maybe had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Secretary Simon, just a question on, you mentioned that it's a pass-through. Is there any admin cost to do so for this account? Or is it just strictly the pass-through?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, yes, there is a cost. When this first came out, I think we absorbed any sort of administrative cost in that, so there's no specific fiscal note that would add administrative cost to us.
And Representative McDonald, the full function of Secretary of State's office with fees and et cetera come in, and it's a surplus, so it actually, there's, I believe, a fair amount of funds go directly back into the general fund.
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I may, I never tire of reminding members that we are a net contributor to the state. We give back to the general fund, I think the last figure, the conservative figure, was something like $24 million more than we cost. So if you take every person, every paperclip, everything in our office, because of the fees on the business side of the office that we charge, that you set, not us, but because of those fees, we're a small profit center for the state of Minnesota. We give back $24 million more than we cost.
Well, thank you. And that was on the conservative side. So it's $3 million on the liberal side?
Ha. I'll leave that.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, I wasn't quite done, but thank you. That's good news, Secretary Simon. That's really good to hear. Just lastly then, because since this is a new program, the Voter Account Fund, any other monies go into that fund from the general fund, or does it all come from this committee here?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, no, it's all you. There's no other fund that I'm aware of. There was the initial infusion of $1.25 million, but then you made the decision last session to take repurpose other funds that were not really being tapped or used, and you just sort of merged them into that fund. So I know of no other source of funds.
Representative Coulter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're pressed for time here, but I just did want to say quickly, as the author of the original author of this this provision, I'm just really, really grateful to see how successful it's been and how supportive our partners at the local level are of it continuing and ideally expanding. And those of us who come from the world of local government know just how important that work is, and know that those costs don't go away just because the state doesn't take care of them. So we had some conversations about ways that we can better support our local partners, and I think this is just a really crystal clear example of that. So really hopeful that we can do more for our partners this year.
Mr. Secretary, any further comments?
No, just thanks to Representative Freiberg, all of you who were there last session to put this into motion, and respectfully hope that you continue to sustain the fund. Thank you.
Thank you, and give our best wishes to Mr. Lindell. Well, now
he's right there.
Oh, there he is. Does the author have any closing statements?
No, I appreciate your consideration. This is thank you to Representative Coulter for the bill last session, and this is a important fund that has benefits all over the state. So thank you for your consideration.
And with that, I will renew my motion and have House File, make sure I get the number right, 977 laid over for possible inclusion. And we have about 15 seconds ahead of time. We are adjourned.